5:33, the Saturday morning show with Paul Harris. Here on the Big 89 WLS. Thanks for making this the station that comes on with your clock radio every Saturday morning to help you get to work or wherever it is you're headed. We're headed to Washington, D.C. now. Let's check in with my friend Josh Kraushaar, who's a political correspondent, and I call on him quite often to be an analyst for this show. He's at the headquarters of Politico.com. Good morning, Josh.
Good to be here, Paul.
It's been a very, very busy week there. We will get to Arlen Specter and Joe Biden and the swine flu and other things, but let's talk about this news that has just broken in the last 36 hours of Justice David Souter possibly retiring from the United States Supreme Court this year. What do you think the impact of this is going to be?
Well, this wasn't a huge surprise, first of all. Souter has never been really comfortable in Washington and in the social life in Washington, and he enjoys getting back to his native New Hampshire. And I think he saw with President Obama in office, this was a good opportunity for him to really enjoy retirement. It's not going to have a huge impact on the ideological composition of the court. Souter's, especially within the last decade, has been really very much with three other liberal justices, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, John Paul Stevens included. And he certainly has never really diverged from that mindset. So, you know, President Obama is likely going to pick someone who matches Souter's liberal philosophy, and he has a really strong opportunity to put his mark on the Supreme Court for the first time in his presidency.
So you don't expect a shift in power on the court?
This is not going to have a major ideological or a political shift. What it may end up doing, depending on who Obama picks, is changing the demographics of the Supreme Court. One of the major names being mentioned in Washington is Sonia Sotomayor, a justice who grew up in the Bronx. Would be the first Hispanic appointed if President Obama chose to go in that direction. So her name is going to be on a lot of short lists when Souter officially announces his retirement and President Obama looks to make that decision.
Will there be pressure? Is there pressure already in Washington on Obama to appoint a Hispanic?
Look, there's going to be a lot of pressure from the reliable interest groups for Obama, who himself is a very historic president, to appoint that first Hispanic justice. So, you know, Obama also has a lot of connections to his days at Harvard Law School, and there are a lot of names like Cass Sunstein is one, and there are a lot of close connections he has to the Democratic liberal legal establishment. So there's going to be a lot of pressure. There's going to be a lot of even from the media to have such a historic moment. But Sotomayor is also one of the names that Republicans dislike and would aggressively contest if she was the nominee. It would certainly signal, if Obama went in that direction, that he'd be willing to really stage a major partisan fight. And it depends on how confrontational the president would want to be with his first Supreme Court selection.
Well, does that matter at all with the switch of Specter and the eventual seating of Al Franken? Are the Republicans pretty much powerless now in a filibuster-proof Senate?
They're powerless. The focus, instead of being on the Senate Republicans, is going to be more on some of the key moderate Senate Democrats, folks like Evan Bayh in Indiana, Blanche Lincoln in the state of Arkansas, Mary Landrieu in Louisiana. The Democrats still can't automatically expect anything President Obama would want.
Yeah, but when it comes to a Supreme Court justice, Josh, they're going to fall in line and go with whoever he picks, right?
Well, not if you're a Democrat in a conservative state and you're up for re-election. That's not an automatic thing for someone like a Blanche Lincoln, who represents a state in Arkansas that went handily for John McCain last year. And she certainly, you know, depending on the pick, she probably would embrace the majority of legal names mentioned. But if it's a very divisive pick, if Republicans decide to really fight and aggressively try to get back their mojo, so to speak, by fighting a Obama Supreme Court justice nominee, you can see a lot of pressure on some of these Senate Democrats who are up for re-election in over a year.
Souter was appointed to the court by George H.W. Bush, a Republican president, at a time when, true, the Democrats still ran Congress, and so he had to kind of bow to what they wanted. But he chose a guy who maybe he thought was going to be a moderate, who turned out to be a staunch member of the liberal wing of the party. Those kind of politics are kind of reversed because of the makeup of Washington and Congress these days, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, President Obama will not have much resistance, whoever he picks. He certainly has a lot of latitude. That's why it'll be very interesting to see if he goes with someone who has a very liberal and somewhat controversial record in Sonia Sotomayor, or if he goes with a more pragmatic choice, maybe a Cass Sunstein, or someone who Republicans have been on record with as saying that they would support. I think Republicans will be willing to give Obama a little leeway if he picks someone with without a history of, you know, making liberal, comments that might exercise them. Keep in mind, when Bill Clinton picked Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when he also had control of Congress in the early 90s, she sailed through the Senate. She faced very, very little opposition, and Republicans didn't really have the stomach to fight. So it's going to be a big test both for Obama to see who he picks, whether he picks a more pragmatic choice, a liberal left of center but not too left of a nominee, or whether he goes with perhaps the most liberal option he has on the table. And that's going to be a real indication of how willing he is to fight for his agenda, not just on the Supreme Court, but for health care, for the budget, and for a lot of other major issues that he's been talking about over the past few months.
Josh, any of these other justices considering retiring?
Well, the next name, the name that we'd heard before Souter, was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has had some cancer-related issues. She said she's committed to staying on the court. She's shown that she is really fighting it and doesn't have any plans to retire. But, you know, she certainly is someone who Supreme Court watchers have looked at as a possible retirement. And, again, another fairly reliably liberal vote, but another opportunity for Obama to cast his brand on the Supreme Court.
Do the conservative members of the court, most of whom are certainly younger, are they locked in now? Would they never, ever leave the court while a Democrat is in the White House?
Well, the one justice to watch is Anthony Kennedy, who's sort of the fulcrum of the Supreme Court. He's always the swing vote with four reliable conservatives and four reliable liberal votes. There's been no evidence that he's looking at retiring, but if there was one justice who can vote in the conservative direction that would be looking at some point, it would probably be Anthony Kennedy. And if he did at some point in the Obama presidency decide to step down, that would be a major, major battle given the ideological and political implications of his departure.
It's the Big 89 WLS. Paul Harris talking with Josh Krauss-Haar from Politico.com. The other seismic shift in Washington this week was Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania announcing that he is going to switch to the Democratic Party because he feels like he could not get elected again, reelected to the Senate, as a Republican. Tell me about the fallout of that, Josh.
Well, the fallout was that he gives Senate Democrats that gets them awfully, awfully close to getting that 60-seat filibuster-proof majority, which would allow them to pass President Obama's agenda much, much easier. Now, he made a major point in his press conference earlier in the week that he's not going to be the automatic 60th vote, and he's going to maintain his independence as he did as a Republican with the Democratic Party. But Arlen Specter wasn't making this choice on a whim, and this is because of his political situation, but he's also getting some incentives on the Democratic side, perhaps some subcommittee chairmanships in the future, and he's been eyeing the Appropriations Committee chairmanship. So this President Obama and Vice President Biden and leading members of the Senate Democratic leadership are doing everything they can to clear the primary field for him, to help anoint him and get him reelected to his sixth term. That means that you're going to see Arlen Specter really help the Obama administration when it's necessary, whether it's on health care, whether it's on this Supreme Court nomination process. And I think the Democratic administration knows they really, while he may not vote with the administration all the time, on all the key votes, I think they feel like they've gotten a really reliable supporter with this switch. So it's a very big win for the administration, a very big win for Harry Reid and the Democratic Senate leadership.
How much pressure does this now put on the Democrats, though? I mean, once you've got the White House and once you've got the House and once you've got the Senate in a filibuster-proof majority, there, I think, is going to be no excuse for you not to move things in the direction you have promised the country you would move it in. On the other hand, it means that there is going to be accountability come election time next year if the country hasn't turned around, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the old saying, with power comes responsibility. And Republicans are already circulating and pointing to some polls that show an increasing number of voters across the country say they want to elect a member of Congress, a senator or congressman, that's going to be a check and balance to uncheck Democratic power in the White House and in Congress, and they would not want someone who would automatically rubber stamp the Obama agenda.
Josh, I got to interrupt you for just a second here, because we always hear people talking about that, and I think that's when they talk about Congress on the whole. But when it comes to voting for their individual congressman, it's rare that people say, oh, well, you know what, checks and balances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, incumbents get returned to the Congress on an incredibly high rate, particularly in the House. I know we've had Republicans who have lost it over the last few years because of Bush administration policies and the way the country was going in their estimation, and certainly the economy last year having a big part in that. But do people actually vote on that grander theme?
Well, no, they don't vote in the abstract. I don't disagree with your larger point. What the pressure on the Democrats is going to be now that they have the power, now that they have control of all three major of the Senate, House, and the presidency, if they make a mistake, it's the blame is going to be on them. And whether it's fair or not, members of Congress who have supported the administration, who have votes that they've been taking over the past 2 years, if they take a bad vote, or they take a vote on, say, the stimulus and the economy doesn't rebound in 2010, it's not going to be the Republicans anymore who are getting the blame. It's going to be squarely on the Democrats. So when you do see voters say that they want some kind of check or balance, you're right. They probably still prefer to elect their congressman. They don't have necessarily a beef with their individual member. But what they will do is, if things start turning sour, or if they disagree with a specific policy that the administration has implemented, they will. There's a little hesitation that they will take it out on that member of Congress. Democrats are still in very, very good shape. There's very, very, very little risk of losing control or even losing significant seats come 2010. But in the long term, it's a worry that they have to be awfully concerned about.
Paul Harris talking with Josh Krausehaar from Politico.com. There's a lot more to discuss. A very, very busy week in Washington. We'll do that right after this on the Big 89 WLS. Saturday morning with Paul Harris on the Big 89 WLS, where Chicago comes to talk. Josh Krausehaar from Politico.com is a longtime contributor to this show. And with all the stuff that's been going on in Washington this week, let's talk some more about the impact of the switch by Arlen Specter from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, and particularly the impact it will have on the GOP. And there's been talk in the last couple of days about how the party is going to go forward from here. Tell me your view on that.
Well, Specter's decision in part speaks to the Republican Party's problems in the Northeast. And, you know, it's striking. There's not a single member of Congress from the entire region of New England that it's a Republican. No one left. In the state of New York, only three members of Congress are Republican. And if Judd Gregg steps down in New Hampshire and Democrats look likely to pick up that Senate seat, that would leave only two senators, the two main moderates, in New England. And Republicans cannot be a national party without being competitive in the Northeast. And what's even more striking is, if you look at Specter's votes and you look at his ratings from all the various organizations, he was not a liberal senator. He was a moderate senator. He was squarely, you know, maybe at the left of the Republican caucus, but he was a pretty moderate member of the Senate who voted with the Republicans on all the Supreme Court battles, who voted with them on a lot of economic issues. So when you can't have Arlen Specter as part of the Republican caucus, it is a real sign of concern. You can't have conservatives trying to have such an ideologically pure party, because you're not going to be a national party that way. And the polls show that there was a recent ABC News poll that showed only 21% of Americans identify themselves as Republicans, which is down 10, 15 points from just several years ago. This is a problem. It doesn't help when you have Michael Steele as Republican National Committee Chairman saying, if you don't vote against the stimulus, you're not in the party, baby. That's not a strategy that's going to help them win seats. And, you know, the striking thing is, on the Senate side, the only way Republicans can win additional seats, can actually pick up seats in the Senate in 2010, is on the hands of moderate members moderate candidates that they have in Connecticut, in Illinois, in state. Charlie Crist, who's probably going to run for the Senate in Florida, actually stood with Obama and supported the stimulus. They need Specter-like candidates to form a national party to have any chance of winning seats, and they're not going to do it by kicking people like Specter out.
Well, let me read you a quote from Steve Schmidt, who was John McCain's senior strategist during his presidential campaign. Schmidt is a guy who helped get Arnold Schwarzenegger elected governor out in California. He says, Republicans should be reexamining the extent to which we are being defined by positions on issues that I don't believe are among our core values. And that puts us at odds with what I expect will become, over time, if not a consensus view, then the view of a substantial majority of Americans. He goes on to say the Republican Party is shrinking. One of the reasons it is shrinking is because there are large demographics in this country that view the party as intolerant or not relevant to them. How much truth do you see in what Schmidt has said?
Now, there's a lot of truth to what Steve Schmidt said, and he should know, given that he was John McCain's right-hand political man during the presidential campaign. Look, I mean, the number of Hispanic voters, the number of non-white voters throughout the country is expanding. They're overwhelmingly supporting Democratic candidates. The number of young voters has actually increased. We saw that in 2008, and they're participating in the political process, and they're supporting Obama, and they largely view Democrats more favorably than Republicans. The Democratic shifts in this country do not favor the GOP, and Steve Schmidt is pointing to the inalienable facts out there, the numbers, the statistics that show that Republicans need to broaden their base, and they can't just have tea parties and can't just stick to the bread and butter issues that have dominated the conservative movement. They have to have a party that incorporates conservative views on the economy and on some social issues, but they have to broaden the base and make sure that moderates can be heard as well. And, you know, you're hearing a lot of ideas out there from a lot of different people, from Newt Gingrich to Eric Cantor, but they really need to focus on making sure it's a broad tent than limiting it to the most activist core of the party.
They've also got to figure out what their bread and butter issues are going to be. I mean, if they're going to keep hanging their hat on things like gay marriage and other social issues like that, where the country has obviously been moving forward. I mean, the Maine Senate has now passed gay marriage, and it'll go on to the House and the governor there. Iowa, of course, was a change there. If the extreme right wing, let's call it the fundamentalist wing of the GOP, keeps talking about stuff like that at a time when Americans, frankly, don't care all that much about that, when we've got an economy in the tank, aren't they just going to continue to shrink their tent?
Yeah, there's a little bit of tone deafness from the Republicans, and you have different messages from different leading voices in the party, whether it's Michael Steele or whether it's Eric Cantor or whether it's Newt Gingrich. And, you know, you expect that. You know, if you have a big tent party, you're going to have a lot of different views. But the problem is, you know, some of the really core issues that exercise voters, and the base voters, rather, in the Republican Party, immigration and gay marriage, those are not, by the majority of voters, poll show, those are not issues that most people put at the top of the radar screen. They look at the economy and the bread and butter issues that affect them. And even though and the short-term trends might be favorable to the Republican Party on gay marriage, but we're seeing increasing numbers of polls out that show a plurality of voters or tie number as many voters support gay marriage as they do oppose it. So in the long term, you're going to see that number increase, more folks supporting gay marriage. And you can't you can't broaden the tent if you're so insistent on focusing on one specific issue and going against the trend where voters are. So it's certainly something that the Republican Party is going to need to address. They've established a council of some of the big thinkers, Jeb Bush being one of them, and a few other party leaders. But, you know, it's going to be more than a few think tanks it's going to help get the party out of the wilderness. They're going to really have to, you know, with their messaging, have to really reach out to centrists and really broaden their message.
Josh, do you think that Spector's switch and what he had to say about the Republican Party might cause other moderate Republicans to make the switch or consider making the switch to the Democratic Party?
Well, Paul, there's not many Republicans left, that, especially in the Senate. You have the two main moderates. And you also have to realize that Spector's decision was awfully looking at his own self-interest.
Sure.
Arlen Spector, the party had been drifting in a conservative direction for quite a while, and his votes have always been very consistent. So it's not like he had an ideological wake-up call that forced him to change parties. He even said as much. He made the switch because he would lose a Republican primary. With the Republican electorate becoming more conservative, there was no way he could win that Republican primary. So I don't think this is going to presage any kind of other party switchers. Olympia Snow would be the one name to look at, and she certainly has aired her opinions and frustration with the National Party. But with Spector, I think it was almost more that you have one individual who looked at his political future. He was up for re-election. He knew he couldn't win, and it was all about self-preservation.
And that's not the case with Snow. She can win as a Republican. She could win as a block of wood in Maine.
And there's no Republicans. Republicans are smarter in Maine because they know that a conservative cannot win statewide in a state like Maine, and it's tough for them to win in a state like Pennsylvania. So you don't see the same grassroots looking to challenge her, or Susan Collins, the other Maine senator, in that regard.
Now, one last thing about the Senate. You reported this week on Politico.com that Jim Bunning, the former baseball player and pretty conservative but thoroughly crazy Republican senator from Kentucky, may be hanging it up this year. What does that mean? Do the Democrats have a chance of picking up another seat there?
Well, the striking thing is every poll showed that if Jim Bunning runs for re-election and doesn't step down, he'll have a very, very hard time winning re-election in a state that's one of the most Republican and conservative states in the country. So you've seen leaders like Mitch McConnell has gotten into a real public argument with Bunning, and they haven't gotten along for quite some time now because McConnell's been trying to push Bunning aside, trying to pressure him to step down, and it looks like with Jim Bunning, this guy's a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. He doesn't like to be told no and told what he has to do to anyone. So it looks like he is arranged some kind of succession scheme for a younger Republican to take his place. But right now he hasn't made any formal announcement. Republicans need to have a younger, fresher candidate. And the guy that Republicans like, it fits the mold, is someone who could be the new face of the party if he got elected. But as long as Jim Bunning is still there, it's going to be hard and it's going to be still contentious for Republicans.
All right, Josh, great stuff. The Politico office is pretty swine flu free this week.
We hope so, and we've seen all the news, but nothing has affected us here in Northern Virginia.
Good. Glad to hear it. Thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Josh Kraushaar from Politico.com here with Paul Harris on the Big 89 WLS.